may be, and welcome to Observations. I'm here with Kirk and Scott. This was a big week, and you know, I have been very critical of the President of the United States. I'm not fond of any American. In fact, I'm very critical of the U.S. government, the U.S. military, patriotism, politics, and of course, religion. And I have looked at Trump as being a dangerous narcissist. And that position hasn't changed. But fair is fair. This week, Trump did two things, one very well, and one important thing that he did poorly. But it was still a good thing to do, it's just that he didn't do it right. On the thing that he did very well is that he announced and passed tax legislation in America that reduces corporate tax rates from 35% to 20%. Maybe way too late, but America's corporate tax rate was amongst the highest, if not the highest, in the industrialized world. And it's what was crippling American business, that and many other things, but it was crippling American business. And it was why so many countries wanted to leave the United States. We're buying companies that were smaller, that just had headquarters outside the United States, so they would no longer be a tax entity in the United States because he couldn't be competitive. And it was just absolutely destroying the economy. And he explained why he was doing it. I listened to a speech that he made on the economy, and while he got into a lot of self-aggrandizing, in the speech, as he is wont to do, he laid out what the reasons were and the justification for his corporate tax cut. And given time, it will have a profoundly positive effect on the American economy. Now, it's not enough to save America economically. The country's over $20 trillion in debt, and with unfunded mandates, you know, that number now is closer to $100 trillion in debt, and there's no way to resolve that problem.
Yeah, time's not very abundant either.
No, we're not long on time, and America's not long on being fluid in terms of its economy. It is, you know, it's already long since destroyed its currency. The thing that he did that was a good thing to do, but he did poorly, is announced that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and it undeniably is the capital of Israel. The reason he did poorly is he did the same thing that that Jerry Falwell did after he read he did an edit pass of Tea with Terrorists, and he came out on the Today Show and said, you know, Muhammad was a terrorist. He hadn't retained enough of the information to explain his point and to explain why that point needed to be made, such as Muslims were perpetrating 99% of the terrorist acts in the world, and Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids during the last 10 years of his life, the first 10 years of the Islamic era. And every one of those raids was an armed robbery. He perpetrated armed robbery against defenseless civilians. For the purpose of entertaining his men by raping the women, enriching them by enslaving the children and robbing them of their possessions. If he had said that, and he explained, this is the reason I'm sharing this with you, is so that you understand why 99% of terrorist acts today are perpetrated by Muslims. They're following Muhammad's example. That would have been a right thing to say and the right way to say it. Trump this week announced, as we've just mentioned, that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It's the right thing to say, but not the right way to say it. What he ought to have said is that, historically, Israel has a greater claim to Jerusalem as its capital as any other nation, more so than any other nation on earth. Their claim not only goes back 3,000 years, but it is undeniable. And that there is the claims against that, which are being made by people who call themselves Palestinians, is shrouded in a complete lie. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. There's no such place as Palestine. If you cannot present yourself truthfully and your cause honestly, then we should not be considering it. And for the world that's going to react negatively to this, They need to understand that there is absolutely no way whatsoever to justify Jerusalem being the capital of a Palestinian state for Palestinian people, since the last Philistine ceased to exist 2,700 years ago. They were wiped out entirely 2,700 years ago. And the thing, the point that I constantly make about Philistia, the Philistines, is that apart from what Yahweh revealed through his prophets, absolutely nothing is known of them. There's not a monument, not a city, not a coin, not a clay tablet with writing on it. There isn't even a record of any of the literate countries around them speaking of them. There is absolutely no record whatsoever of the Philistines, which the Palestinians have usurped that name. Nothing is known about them apart from what is said in Shaphat, Judges, in Samuel, and in the Torah about these people. And there they are presented as ruthless, invading, uncivilized terrorists. So if what Yahweh has to say in the Torah, in Judges, in Samuel, is valid, they have no claim to the land whatsoever, and the last of them was wiped out by the Assyrians in 720 BCE. If what Yahweh said cannot be trusted, then they don't exist. They never did exist.
Very well put.
Just think it through, people. So, and then the other thing he ought to have said is that there are claims now by a number of Islamic leaders around the world that by announcing the truth that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, that it's going to ignite violence across the region. And my response to that is a warning. If Muslims are going to respond violently to an announcement that is undeniably true, all they're going to do is to affirm that they never were a party for peace. That they never were people that you could give something to in hopes that they would live peacefully. That they are, in fact, terrorists and murderous and ruthless. So if they want to prove who they are by throwing stones and shooting people and knifing people and protesting and screaming, then they're just showing that they're ignorant, vile, and are not a party that anyone should be negotiating with under any circumstance because they cannot be trusted.
Well, even on the negotiations, though, like, the primary thing is you have to acknowledge that Israel has the right to exist. Like, that's the bargaining thing, and they're like, no, we won't do that. So why would you negotiate with that?
Yeah, well, the bottom line is that Muslims, because Allah was modeled after Satan, therefore Islam exists to annihilate Yahweh's chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a statement of opinion. Just fact. If you can't figure that out by examining Islamic history or reading the Quran and Hadith, then you ought not express your opinion because it is unfounded. Muhammad either enslaved, raped, or murdered every Jew within camel ride of Mecca and Medina. Yesteryear's Yathrib. And there are extra bonus points in Islam for killing Jews. And Allah is stunningly anti-Semitic. And so it's the world's position that Israel should be constrained, should be kept locked up in this little tiny compartment that is undefensible. And it is the Muslim and also anti-Semitic Christians' point of view that that's just the first step towards completely eliminating Israel and annihilating all Jews. You know, I was translating chapter 11 of Yeshayah, and there's some really interesting statements here. One of the statements that God makes is that he is going to cut off, sever all relationships with, banish, and either destroy or incarcerate everyone who tries to constrain Yehuda. Anyone engaged in trying to limit or put restrictions on Yehuda will be eternally severed from a relationship with Yahweh.
That's a warning.
There's a warning for you. And it's specific to the crime that is being perpetrated by the world. But that's my problem with the Donald Trump announcement, is he needed to make all three of those points. He didn't make any one of them. The only point that he made is that, you know, people will disagree with this, but, you know, the fact is that if you want to say that keeping Jerusalem open to negotiation is essential to reach a peace, then I'm here to tell you that that's what has happened over the last 60 years, and it hasn't achieved one, so why would we continue down that same path? That's the only argument that he made. That, and all the other presidents have made that as a promise during the campaign to get elected, but none have followed through. I'm following through.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was the right move,
the wrong
rhetoric surrounding it. And when you don't present the right rhetoric, what happens is that the media has a field day and saying, well, he went against, you know, the policy of the whole world. The whole world warned him that if he did this, there'd be an eruption of violence in the world. So they want to blame the violence
on him,
on Trump, because Trump didn't present the case correctly. And if he had presented it correctly, there would be no way to do that. The violence would be correctly blamed on those who are perpetrating it and the religion that is inspiring it.
When it's so obvious, it gets very frustrating to me. And I read an article a while ago, and they basically talked the same thing, that Israel wasn't the capital. It didn't belong to Israel. And it went through the history because of this war and this, that, and the other. Well, because if I'm given something by Yahweh himself, it's mine forever. Mm-hmm. It's mine if I get kicked off the land because I have a broken down relationship with Yahweh. That doesn't make the promise any less that it'll be my descendants. It's always for his descendants. So,
correct. Yeah, that's one of the reasons he says that, because I'm bringing, he sets it up by saying, I'm bringing Israel back home. And so the thing he's not going to tolerate is anyone that tries to restrict Yehuda, because he's bringing him back home. By the way, it's interesting. He tells he presents the places that he's going to bring his children home, and he says, you know, it's come to pass on that day, my upright one will once again join his hand a second time and bring forth and redeem the remnant of his family. And then it lists a number of places where he's going to pull them. The last of the places is, and from the coastlands of the sea. Now, the coastlands of the sea would be the shores of countries either between or surrounded to some extent by large bodies of water.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the United States, Canada, Central and South America, Western and Southern, and also Northern Europe, Turkey, India, New Zealand, Australia, and South Africa. So I just wanted to do a quick analysis as to where Jews are today and what percentage of Jews that are still living in diaspora that represents. It was sort of interesting. There are 6.4 million Israelites, Jews, in Israel.
Jerusalem.
6.4 million. Yeah. In Israel. Yeah, 6.4 million. There are 6.2 million, plus or minus 500,000, in the United States. The United States is the country that is routinely depicted as under Ur, which is just perfect for the United States, because it's Ir. It's the vowel Aleph, and then followed by the Yod. Because it's literally the land surrounded by the two oceans. In fact, three, if you consider the Gulf of Mexico beneath it.
Mm-hmm.
So 6.2 million, all of those would be subject to this relocation event. Now, outside of that, there's five or six countries that represent a little over a million Jews. France at 450,000. That number is declining rapidly. Canada at 385,000. America's hat. The United Kingdom at 260,000. Russia used to be a very large concentration. Now it's only 180,000, and it's really declining rapidly because of the resurgence of anti-Semitism there. Argentina at 175,000. That's declining rapidly. And Germany at 95,000. Australia is at 115,000.
How about Spain? It's not a lot. It's not.
No, no. As a matter of fact,
I know they've called to get out.
Yeah. Like places like the Ukraine, which is one of the fastest declining Jewish populations because of the hatred of Jews there.
Yeah.
Spain, there are a grand total of 30,000.
Wow. That's very small.
Yeah. And it goes on down to places like, you know, you get to Romania's 9,000, Austria's 9,000, Iran 9,000, Poland 7,000, Venezuela 8,000, New Zealand 7,000. And it goes on down to the point where Colombia is the last country with 4,000 or more. Greece declining rapidly, 4,000. And the whole country of India, 5,000. And when you total the world Jewish population that would be encompassed by the list that Yahweh provided, it would be 8.285, so 8.285 million will be rescued. Those who will not be rescued, that total is 265,000. So it's 97%. Yahweh's list is 97% of the world's Jews. I did think it was interesting that here are some countries that are mostly Muslim countries and the number of Jews in these countries. There's 18 Jews in Egypt. This is according to the CIA. 18. 100 in Pakistan. 30 in Yemen. And then fewer than 10, could be as few as 5. In Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, Libya, Algeria, Sudan, Somalia, Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Collectively, that's fewer than 250 Jews amongst 1,100,000,000 Muslims. It's 0.0002%.
Taking the note here.
Wow. I mean, is that just staggering?
What's wrong with those guys? Is what I have. Wow, they're
just staggering. Yeah, but anyway, then God says He's going to. There's two places in Yeshaya 11 where God speaks specifically of lifting up a banner. So after bringing his children home from these countries, he says, I'm going to lift up a banner for the Gentile nations so they know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then together he's going to remove the children of Israel from the four corners, the four extremities of the earth. And just prior to this, just prior to his announcement that he was going to be pulling his children from all of these places, he also mentions the same banner. He says, and it shall come to pass in that day that the root from the foundation of the root of the matter, that which is excavated and mined from the source by those who dig deep into the root of Yishe, that's the existence that would be Dod's father, who to show the way will stand up and present himself as a signal and banner for God's family. And then he says, even of him, Gentiles will also seek. So it's interesting. So it's a banner lifted up initially, this banner for his children, so that they know that he is going to be returning them to Israel. and that that Gentiles who are open and observant and are seeking to know Yahweh at this time will also see this banner and benefit from it, come to know. The next line is all about the extraordinary nature of Yahweh's home. And then he lists all the places he is going to be removing his children from. And then he says that it's going to come from the four corners of the earth. And as he is removing them from the four corners of the earth, he is notifying the Gentiles why he's doing so. So it's a...
Anything fair.
Yeah, fair is fair. So it's really been an interesting review. And then after all of that happens, Yahweh is saying that he's going to reconcile the relationship between Ephraim, the northern kingdom, Yisrael, and Yehuda specifically, and that there's going to be no more enmity and envy between them. He specifically says that any one who's engaged in trying to constrain the size of, restrict the size of Yehuda will be completely severed, cut down, cut away, discarded.
Great news.
Yep. And then it says that the remaining Israelites are going to wipe out the high positions, the elevated positions, the cache of armaments by flying planes over the those that are calling themselves Philistines. And that will be the last.
Is that the other place? Is it the Syria or the Lebanon where the Hamas is, you know, or
it says that most of them that they attack will be on the east side of Israel.
Okay.
So this is what's referred to now as the West Bank.
West Bank, yeah.
Yeah. That's what it says. So it is certainly an interesting glimpse into our immediate future. Well, that happens to be from chapter 19. We're still in chapter 9 in our review, so it'll be a while before we get there. What we had considered a week ago is that we were reading Bereshit chapter 6. We read the first seven statements, and this was the seventh. It kind of sets up what follows. Then Yahweh said, I will remove the contamination of the descendants of Adam, which for the benefit of the relationship I brought into existence out of the Almighty's material realm. For concerning humankind, inclusive of the predatory beasts, the testimony of the slithering reptiles, and the winged creatures of the spiritual realm, surely I regret, as an expression of my sympathy, that I have engaged with them.
That should be his heart rending.
Yeah, that that God looks at humankind and said, you know, you're repulsive. I wanted, my whole reason for doing this is I had love to give. And you just turned out to be repulsive. You're unlovable. That's what he's saying. And what's interesting is that the description of these people, you know, of course, this was the time of the Nephilim and the militant religious individuals,
right.
And just vicious for the fun of being vicious. I don't even think it's remotely possible that the Nephilim and their like of that today were even 1% as egregious as what we're witnessing in the Islamic world in terms of their day of rage.
You know, that's the very note I have on my little post-it note here in comparison of this section to what we're reading in the very end times.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Nephilim.
Yeah. That the way that people around the world, you know, the United States has got the mightiest military in the world by many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, broke Iraq, broke Syria, broke Afghanistan, and caused, you know, this massive migration and further angered and enraged Muslims. I mean, what we've done is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But you just look at how vile mankind. You look at the faces and the attitude and the behavior, particularly the Muslims that are shouting that, you know, that Jerusalem is their eternal city. I mean, okay, so you're stupid enough to be fooled by a religion that was modeled after Satan. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that you're stupid enough to be fooled that Jerusalem somehow belongs to a mythical people now called the Palestinians.
Well,
you're doing is saying you're stupid.
But what's the relationship between a Palestinian and Islam? I mean, other than the same behavior, but they weren't claiming it for, if they were, which they weren't, they weren't claiming it for Islam. That's, the whole thing is stupid. I mean, any angle you take is the most absurd. Muhammad never went there.
Of course not. But, he claims that while he was sleeping, when he was 54, 55 years old, and he's in bed with a 9-year-old girl at the time. He was still in Mecca at the time. So he would have been 50, and she was 6.
Yeah.
So here's a 50-year-old having sex with a 6-year-old girl. And while he claimed that he was in bed, and she was wise enough to say, even at 6, and he never moved, he claims that he rode on a winged ass, a flying ass, from Mecca to Jerusalem. Now, last time I checked, asses don't fly. But that's not the biggest part of the story. When he got to Jerusalem, the ass took him directly into the temple.
Mm-hmm. Which existed how long?
It was destroyed in 70 CE. This was now 20?
Yeah, 600 years.
Yeah. It had been gone for... gone for 5 centuries.
Yeah.
But Muhammad was too stupid to know that. And Muslims are too stupid to figure it out that, oh, by the way, he was lying.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then he met with all of the Jewish Yehudim, the bigwigs. So I met with Abraham there and Noah and Esau. Esau would be is actually a transliteration of Esau, the person that God said he hated. But Muslims have been connived and cajoled into believing that's Jesus. Well, Jesus would be Yosha. The written Arabic uses the Hebrew alphabet, so there's no issue in incorrectly. That's why they call Jews Yahud. Same language. That's why the Quran is called the Quran from the Hebrew Kara.
All out.
Yeah. Anyway, he claims he met with all of the bigwigs, and then he wanted to go to see Allah in the seventh heaven, and so it is from the temple that his winged ass took him towards heaven. You know the first stop towards heaven?
Hell. Went to hell first.
Oh yeah, the hell. Hell. Hell's the first stop. There he saw women who were hanging by the breasts. That hell was filled with women hanging by meat hooks through their breasts, and they were. When he asked why they were there, because they were not grateful for all of the things their husbands were doing for them. There's a sick man, and from hell he managed to next step up through to Allah's seventh heaven, where the great and mighty Allah said that what I want you to do is bow down to me 50 times a day. I want you to prostrate yourself 50 times a day. So that's the story that the Dome of the Hoofy Print, Dome of the Rock, is supposed to commemorate, and why Muslims claim Jerusalem as their eternal city. It's just laughable how unbelievably disgusting all of that is. And then from that point on, Muhammad just started slaughtering Jews. He has 3 Jewish women in particular. There's long discussions about how he chose them to rape them. And how he would, at one day, he cut off the heads of 900 Jewish men. And enslaved all the children while his men played a game of lots for who got to pick which one they got to rape. That is the religion of Islam that is protesting and saying that it wants Jerusalem and I can tell you Yahweh's response. He is disgusted. But, you know, he is also disgusted by all the little curly, cute, hair, black hat wearing Orthodox Jews that bob their heads at the Wailing Wall saying rabbinic prayers. He finds them every bit as repulsive. And he finds all of those Christians who completely discount everything that he had to say and replace it with Pauline myths that they're equally disgusting. 99% of mankind, he finds appalling. Just as it was on the day of Noah. Now, on the day of Noah, he was it. Ultimately, it would include his family, because that's the nature of the covenant. But he was it. But Noah, which means the trustworthy guide to a beneficially prepared and beautiful, restful home. Attained, discovered, and experienced favorable acceptance in the sight of Yahweh. It doesn't say he was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It says that he attained and experienced favorable acceptance in the sight of Yahweh. This, then, is the generational record of the story of Noah. The trustworthy guide to a beautifully prepared and restful home was individually right. That's all God really wants. Just be right about him. Be correct. And thus upright and vindicated. He was unobjectionable by being entirely correct with regard to the truth among his generation, his time, his people and place. Alongside the Almighty, Noah walked alone and independently. There are so many people that say there's no way that you can be right about God and 2.5 billion Christians be wrong. You can't be right about Allah and 1.5 billion Muslims be wrong. Well, yeah, I don't know what the world population was at this time, but he was the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they made the same argument then?
Well, they thought they were doing all right.
Right. Think the Romans made the same argument? The Greeks made the same argument? The Egyptians made the same argument?
Let me show you how profound I find it on just above when we talked about favorable.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize them as favorable, and that's, of course, Chin.
Yes.
And I won't go into a long diatribe because I spent hours on this, and I couldn't believe how many things I found about it. Mm-hmm. What disturbed me was I was looking at the English translation as well with the Masoretic, and they used, of course, they changed the word to grace, which is, at best, it's a lightweight term. It's a pagan thing.
Grace is based partly on the Latin.
The three graces.
Grace came to English by way of the Latin Roman gratia, which were the Roman goddesses that were the match for the Greek goddesses that were always shown as in their naked form, lascivious merriment. You know, they were the party animals of their day. They were the what is the name of the women that have their the Kardashians? that's who the gratia were. So if you're into the graces, then I'm sure you'd love the Kardashians. By the way, I shouldn't be disparaging the Kardashians.
No,
I don't know them. I never watched the show, so I don't mean to be disparaging them. But I will disparage the concept of grace. It is despicable. It's pagan. It's licentious. The puritanical Christian that, boy, you know, you've got to wear something that comes up just below your chin, and you know you ought not even show elbow. You know, it's the this, we're going to cover you all up, and there's no premarital hanky panky and all that sort of. Well, and they're into the gospel of grace. Well, the gospel of grace is the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
It is orgy based. Yeah, orgy based hanky panky.
This means let's go party. Yeah.
Yeah, and most orgy based hanky panky with slaves.
Yeah.
Which makes it rape.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Well, that was my beef with the English theologians and the English translators, because they reverse all the meanings of a simple thing, and we're talking about a most fundamental thing. So I looked it up in a lot, and then I went to the verb in Canaan.
Yeah, it's the basis of Yahu Canaan, the name, John. Yahu Canaan. Yahu was
favor, mercy, display acceptance. And then it says to bestow, bestowal of redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And long form, it says to bend or stoop in kindness to an inferior, which is what Yahweh was doing. You can notice that by his hand, by his arm reaching down, the first letter of his name, Yod.
Yeah.
It sounds just like Yahweh, not us bowing down in prayer, obviously. That's the way he's talking about him. And you have Kana or Kana is to decline or bend down, to encamp. I thought was interesting because it tells us that Yahweh, number one, is lowering himself to be with us, number one, like Pesach, and then to encamp with us like Sukkah, or if you want, the 3 years when Yahusha was here camping with us.
Yeah, it's so amazing that there
are all those meanings get lost. I got even more, but it's
the chin speaks of bowing down.
No.
But it's not the recipient that's bowing down.
No.
It's the provider that's bowing down. Yeah, it's the provider. It's God getting on his knees.
Yeah.
That's the whole Christian idea and the Muslim idea of you get down on your knees to lift God up in praise is not only impossible and ludicrous and demeaning to God. The antithesis is what God intends, and it's practical. A loving father gets down on his knees to lift his children up in love. And that's the concept of chin. It's of Yahweh getting down on his knees to lift up his children.
Mm-hmm. Well, to further that point, and to prove that you're correct, if you looked up chin and continued on all the different meanings, you would find that from Yah's view, his word, it would be viewed as a beautiful thing worth protecting. You'd also have a family camping out. You can look a family camping out in tents, making a wall. If you use the letters, like in the desert with Moshe, where they all camped out. We talked about that a lot when we were doing the study on the Exodus. The nun is the sperm, so it's obviously talking about the continuous of the family, and it means the wall of protection continues or goes on with his people forever. Then you have Kana, and the first thing is interesting about Kana, I found, was the first thing in setting up a tent is to arrange the poles, and you know the poles had a spear on the end, so it was a place of protection as well as an upright pole lifting up and giving you protection from the fences, and a place to support the upright is the upright point, so you get all the meanings of an upright pole. I mean, and all of that is missed because some jerk decided, well, we want to use grace.
Yeah. And so here
and
you
may
have...
And it may be subtle, it may not mean anything to a lot of people. To me, it just emphasizes how much trouble they go to or how they just will not look at what he says and embrace all the things it says.
Right. Correct.
So,
and
pardon my interruption, but...
But Noah attained favor.
Yeah.
Mercy, acceptance, chin in the sight of Yahweh. And he did so the same way we do, by being right, by being correct. That's what it says here. He says he was unobjectionable and by being entirely correct with regard to the truth. He was correct. He understood who Yahweh is, knew his name, knew who he is, knew what he wanted, and knew that God wanted him to walk with him. Not bow down to him. And he wanted him to separate himself from politics and from religion, which Noach had did. Noach was alone among men because he walked independently with Yahweh. This is the same exact way we come to him today.
Yep.
Nothing has changed. That's why this story is so important. And Noach... conceived and fathered the following sons, with Shem, which means the proper and designated name, who is the father of the Yehudim. And just start right there. You can even stop right there. If you don't know and use Yahweh's name, you do not know him. You are not in a relationship with him. No. You will not be saved by him. Now, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than just knowing his name and using his name. But that is a prerequisite, and it eliminates 99.99999% of the world's population. Knowing and using his name is not enough by itself to cause one to become eternally part of Yahweh's family and be invited in his home, but not knowing and using his name will exclude you. And so it excludes all but 1 in 1 million people. It is a necessary first step. That's why I tell people, you know, they claim that, you know, what do you say about Jesus? I said, you don't even know who he is. And if you don't, if you don't know his name, I'm going to tell you, don't know him. And if you know his name, you'll know essentially that he is irrelevant. What do I mean by that? His name means Yahweh saves. Yahweh is relevant. So, the first thing is, his first son was named Shem, which means name. Nothing more important than knowing Yahweh's name. Ham, C-H-A-M, so it's the hard C-H-A-M, Ham, which means passionately idolatrous sun worshiper, who was the father of Canaan. And Yesef, the popular deception, opening the broad and popular way which deceives, entices, and seduces simple-minded, naive, and gullible people, who was the forefather of the Greeks, the Romans, the Roman Catholics, the Christians, and the Europeans. It's interesting that if I were writing this today, after what I have subsequently learned, I would have written that Ham, the passionately idolatrous sun worshiper who was the father of Canaan, now that I know about the Canaanite religion,
right.
I would say he was the forefather of Islam.
Yeah. Why did it only take from him to his grandson, and we have Nimrod? I mean, my God.
Yes.
That's such a short period of time, and already we've got Babylon exploding on the scene.
Correct.
I just.
Yeah. Immediately.
Mind. Now, you talk to your grandchild. I talk to my grandparents, you know, and they passed on what they passed on. And surely somebody who had gone through that, you would have thought, I mean, I'm just hypothetical.
Yeah.
You would have thought that they would have gotten it. And it would have taken several generations, many generations, I would hope, before this thing would fall apart again and we'd be heading right back to Nephilim Neptune.
Right. Human beings were created as a social being by design, because God created us for a relationship with him.
Emily.
So we were created as a social being. We literally go insane if we're left alone.
Yeah.
We literally go insane. It's torture. We can't even survive when left alone for a prolonged period of time.
So we were designed as a
social creature. And the individual who is not thoughtful, who is just looking for immediate and easy gratification, will choose the family of man to satiate that need. Unfortunately, it never works. Man always disappoints. But man is convenient, tangible, available. And so, you know, whether they solicit it through sex, through control, force, however it may be.
Monetary, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it may be. Monetary,
stuff.
Right. Man, the vast preponderance of people don't bother to think and simply respond and say, I can scratch that itch, even though it'll continue to itch for the rest of my life, by just becoming part of the family of man. It is the rare individual like Noach that says, you know, I don't need to be part of the family of man. It's always disappointing. I'm going to walk and be independent. I'm going to go the other way. And I want to be part of the family of God. Now, it takes a lot of thinking. You've got to be right. You've got to know what you're doing. You've got to pay attention. But we were conceived to be part of that relationship.
Yes.
And that relationship is wholly satisfying.
Yeah. That's why we're such small numbers.
That is correct. It will always be that way. Now, the region was corrupt, a slime pit of putrid matters in the presence of the Almighty. And the realm was filled with the proclamations and satisfied with the overwhelming abundance of malicious false testimony, destructive violence, cruel oppression, and vicious terrorism. Now, if that's not a description of 99% of the world today, I dare you to find a better
one. Wrong with our perception.
Right. Now, the region, you can make it the earth if you want.
Uh-huh.
It's Eretz.
Yeah.
The earth was corrupt. A slime pit. A putrid matters. The presence of the Almighty. And the realm was filled with the proclamations and satisfied with the overwhelming abundance of malicious false testimony. All political pundits are liars. All religious pontificators are liars. All advocates of socialist secular humanists, of humanism, are liars. That's just the fact of the matter. They're all liars. People are satisfied with false testimony, and it's overwhelming. And as a result, they're destructively violent, they're cruel, and they're vicious. They're terrorists. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of that, I even went further with Shakoff as written pictorially, where words are separating from the doorway, the mark from the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
But you put the chat in between. So, I mean, at every level, that's what corruption does, and that's what they do. When we get later, we'll get into where they publish and speak and preach, and it's like that's the thing. It's so obvious reading through this to me that he's talking about, I know, yes, politics, military, they'll say they're enforcers and so forth, but it's religion. It's those words, those disgusting words of Paul, words of Islam.
Malicious false testimony. And you talk about cruel oppression. You know how many women today are sex slaves?
It's in the millions, just the recent ones.
So it's in the tens of millions.
It's
between 45 and 50 million.
Yeah.
45 to 50
I think that's
million.
Because South America, they basically kidnap them there and send them all over the country as well.
But most of the women that are sex slaves are captured by just despicable people, but sent to Islamic countries.
Yeah.
And the reason they're sent to, the vast preponderance of them are sent to Islamic countries, and that's paying for them, is because if you're a woman who has been sent to Kuwait or Saudi Arabia as a sex slave, first they have the money because of the oil to buy them, and there's no way for them to escape. They don't have to put them in chains.
You can't get prosecuted either.
They can't walk outside the house without being arrested. They try to escape. They're beaten to a pulp. Their passports, they don't even have any passports. They're brought in illegally. They can't leave. And there is nothing they can do. If they even went to the U.S. Embassy, the U.S. Embassy won't do anything. And so that's where the majority of them go. And it's legal in Islam.
Well,
they have sex lives.
Yeah, I grew up where we were taught to hate Russia because they oppress their people, and nobody ever speaks to this issue.
No. You know, it's interesting. I did a number of shows on how the most abusive institution outside of the Roman Catholic Church and fundamentalist Islam in terms of women was the U.S. military.
Oh, yeah.
And that a woman is 8 times more likely to be sexually abused while in the U.S. military as she is in outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that only 1% of the perpetrators of sexual abuse in the U.S. military are actually prosecuted and held accountable. 99% are not held accountable. And the vast preponderance of women who are the victims of sexual abuse in the U.S. military are victimized by their chain of command further rather than finding remedy. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, why did the Congress allow the military to continue to handle those cases internally with the military justice system as opposed to turning them over to the civilian courts? Well, now we know the answer. They're falling like flies on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. one after another is having to resign because of multiple accusations of sexual abuse. So that is the world that we live in, and God's not pleased. In fact, he would owe all of these people an apology if he doesn't respond in kind to today's world.
Mm-hmm.
And he will.
Yeah.
God observed and considered this region of the material realm. So now listen carefully. Be especially observant and notice that it was perverted. It was corrupt. And she had become a swamp of murky ideas, a dark dungeon which imprisoned the dead and dying, depriving them of life and liberty. For indeed, every human prone to preaching was corrupting because he had ravaged his victims with his perversions, which were a result of his way, of man's way. You know, you'll read flesh is what's bad here in your English translations from Bashar, but Bashar's primary meaning is not flesh.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's not even animal nature.
Yeah.
Bashar's primary nation is to preach,
mm-hmm.
is to publish. And it's to preach and publish that which the hearers consider to be good news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask a Christian, what does gospel mean? They'll say, oh, it means good news. And so we should preach the good news.
Spread the good news across the world. Yeah.
This is how Christianity, particularly Protestant, well, even Catholicism, this is how they view themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Bashar.
You challenge the when the people out there, if they haven't read it, when they read that, you challenge them to that it could be. And this is the one where you're challenging whether it can be read either way.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that a little bit later? So I went to Bashar, and it's easy to find. Obviously, it can be Bashar can be a man, a human, and so forth. But it's not the line of Adam or the ish.
An animal. It can be an animal. It can be a beast. It can be in flesh.
It could be that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But basically, he's talking about a man here. Obviously, because they don't animals don't preach and publish. But Bashar is very easy to find. Is to bear tidings or to bring.
Mm-hmm.
Bring or tell or present the news. Well, news doesn't have to be good and be a messenger. But it's also to preach, I found pretty quickly.
It doesn't mean that the news is
good.
It doesn't mean that the news is good. It means that the news, the tidings, are perceived by those who hear them, and is presented by those who are articulating them as if they were good. It's again, it gets right to the heart of Christianity.
Yeah.
Bad news presented as if it was good news.
Yeah. So, you know, and the letters say the same thing, because you're using sin.
Right, which is words.
Grab and something sharp and piercing and the same.
Right. Piercing words.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, everywhere you turn... what I try to do,
and the B would be home, so it'd be the home, of piercing words,
right?
And the R at the end, Bashar.
Words is still the home of words,
right.
Against man,
right? Well,
we can make the wrong direction if you want.
The R is from man's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So they're piercing words. From the house of man and conceived from man's perspective.
You can find no relationship to Yahweh in this word as far as, you know, where we're looking.
No.
Or Yod and so forth. So this is all mankind doing what he's doing to man. So, and there's no way. So when you suggest that, well, it could be this or it could be that. No, it can't. It's exactly what you've chosen.
Right, and it's not the way you would depict a flesh, which would be animal flesh, would not be to show the teeth, the shin. It would not be to show the resh, the head of a human being. And it wouldn't be to show a home, because this is just animal nature.
Yeah.
Animals don't live in homes with a floor plan. They don't look like human beings, and they don't have the kind of teeth that we have. Their fang teeth. That's not how shin is depicted. Those are not the letters that you would use to describe flesh.
No.
No, it means it's the house of human words, of words spoken from the human perspective. That's what it means. That's what the letters convey.
So it's no problem there. I mean, it's very clear if you look a little bit.
Yep. And that's how it was those words, that preaching, that ravaged his victims with his perversions, which were the result of his way. God even explains it following the use of Bashar. So then God spoke. And if it was just because they were animalistic, God loved the animals. God does not have a problem when a lion eats a gazelle. Doesn't have an issue with that. Doesn't bother him at all.
And it's the way they were doing something wrong.
Right.
He's eating and feeding his family.
Right. It's the way they were designed.
Yeah.
So it's not
doesn't wipe out the herd either.
It's not the animal nature. It's the despicable preaching. So then God spoke while approaching Noah. A limitation constraining every human prone to preaching has come. For I have noticed that indeed the region is filled with the proclamation of and is satisfied with the overwhelming abundance of malicious false testimony, of destructive violence and cruel oppression, and vicious terrorism. So, because of their presence, now pay attention to me, listen carefully and be especially observant, standing up and taking notice that they are corrupting the material realm. So choose of your own volition to engage, working to make an ark of laminated and resinous wooden timbers, constructing rooms within the ship. Then cover her, including the house, and also the outside with pitch. Now we'll continue this description. So what was the Yahweh's solution to humankind? What did he ask? How did he approach Noah?
He told him of his own volition, number one.
Right. Yeah,
he strikes me as to choose to walk with me.
Yeah, he talked to him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, words, of course.
Yeah, talk to him.
Dabarim.
Yeah. No. The book of the fifth book of the Torah, Dabarim, words.
Yes.
Yahweh spoke the universe into existence. Words. The entire Torah is Yahweh speaking to us.
Mm-hmm.
So he began, he spoke. If you want to hear God speak to you, just as he spoke to Noah. In fact, you can hear exactly what he spoke to Noah. Just read Bereshith out loud as we're doing.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
I don't have enough time in our life to read everything he's trying to tell us.
Right, right. The second thing is make an ark.
Yeah.
Yeah, make. You need to engage. This is going to be equated to the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to be told about the rainbow and what it represents, and it's the Ark of the Covenant. And so, if you want to be with Yahweh, you want to capitalize on what Yahweh was saying, you've got to be willing to listen to him, which you do by reading his Torah, and then acting upon what you hear.
Yeah.
He gave Noah specific instructions. What did Noah say? Hey, that's a nice story. I'll take it under advisement.
No, yeah.
That's a nice story, but, you know, that's works related. So I really prefer the gospel of grace. I'm going to jump ahead to the Christian New Testament. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the next version.
Yeah. You want a damn boat? You make your damn boat.
You got another way to save me? Wings of an angel, maybe?
No, thank you. That sounds like work. I'm going to go another way. I'm going to wait for Paul. He'll come up with a plan that... that's based on Bashar. No. He told Noah that this is what you need to do. Now, it's your choice. You don't have, I'm not imposing it. I'm not forcing you to this, but, you know, bad things are going to happen to the world. I'm going to give you the opportunity to be safe. You and your family, the opportunity to be safe. And it's going to require engaging and working to make an ark. And then we're going to do this, and we're going to cover it. And the reason we're going to cover it is the word for cover is kafar.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Which is all about reconciliation.
A lot of stuff there.